a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. You're in the KSL Greenhouse. I'm Ethan Millard. I'm filling in for Maria Chaleos. And with me, as always, I've got the USU Extension horticulturalist, Ton Bettis. Ton, are you ready to get back to some phone calls?
I'm ready.
Okay. One quick reminder. That phone number is 801-575-8255. That's 801-KSL-TALK. You can also text us at 57500. And check out that great article on the Japanese lilac tree on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. That's facebook.com/KSL Greenhouse. Also follow us on Instagram. Now, who have we got here first? Oh, we've got James calling in from Plain City. James, welcome. You're in the KSL Greenhouse.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Well, thanks. What's on your mind?
Hey, so we moved up here to Plain City a year ago. We got our yard put in last year, and we're just trying to find some options for some good, quick-growing shade trees. We've got younger kids, and we want to find something. We've heard from other locals that have been out here a lot longer than we have that some trees don't do as well as others, particularly pines. But, you know, we've got a higher water table out here being closer out to the lake and really crummy clay for soil. And so we're just trying to find some options. My wife was doing a lot of research and she'd come across the Zelkova tree.
Okay.
Wondering if you got any thoughts on that.
All right.
You might be able to give it a shot. The area I'm somewhat familiar with, grew up in North Davis County and am from, you know, that Davis-Weber County area. And so I, you know, been out to Plain City and West Warren, all those areas out there, and I'm familiar with the soils. And the closer you get to the Great Salt Lake, I think you get increased amounts of salt. So the particular area you were in, was it ever in agriculture as far as wheat or alfalfa?
Yes.
Okay, so if it was in agriculture, I think that you might get away with doing some Zelkovas. If you were in the areas that were only used for pasture, there was a reason, because the soil wouldn't support, you know, growing other things. And so that's my delineation without soil testing to try to tell you what to put in there. And so a Zelkova may work. Now, you still may run into, and Zelkovas don't generally get iron chlorosis, but you may run into a bit. What I would recommend doing is having your soil tested by the Utah State University Analytical Laboratory up in Logan. If you just go to the website usual.usu.edu, then you want the routine test. And then what you're going to do is look at that test and it'll tell you your soil pH. If the pH is below 8, then the Zelkova would work. But if it's above, then I would maybe veer toward something like Sensation Box Elder, which is a seedless box elder, so it shouldn't attract in all the box elder bugs, or maybe the hybrid elms. The hybrid elms will tolerate slightly crappy soils, for lack of a better term, and still do quite well. And both of those trees will have a growth rate of, you know, 18 inches to 2 feet a year, so you'll get some faster growth out of them, but they're not cottonwoods, which I wouldn't recommend unless that's just your last option. Even though they'll grow 5 or 6 feet a year, 10 or 15, 20 years down the road, you oftentimes, you paid $50 for it and then pay $5,000 to have somebody remove it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, James, this is a recommendation we get a lot from Tawn of getting that soil testing, but it goes so quick. It's so quick and so easy, and it can save you from investing years in the wrong tree.
Yeah, no, that's a great piece of advice. Can I get that website from you again?
Yeah, just the word usual.
Okay.
Then .usu.edu.
Okay.
And when you click on the testing options, you want the routine test. That one's been designed for homeowners. It has your pH, your salinity. That's the other thing you're going to want to look at is the salinity. And then also phosphorus and potassium levels and your soil texture. And those will be what you need to help determine what landscape plants will do well in your yard. Now, on your irrigation water, is your irrigation water coming out of Pine View or out of Willard Bay?
It's out of Pine View.
Okay, so it's going to be good water. If you are on well water, I would have you test the well water too, just to make sure it's not salty, because that area, if people are on those shallow wells, it's infamous for having salty water.
Mm. Sure. Oh, that's awesome. And so when we do finally make a decision as far as which trees to plant throughout the yard, we've also heard, you know, dig a good hole and then fill the bottom of it with gravel.
No. Nope.
No.
No.
Okay.
You're making a swimming pool under the tree. So what will happen is water will flow into that gravel, and it won't flow through the soil until that gravel is almost 100% saturated. You are better off, if the soil turns out to be clay texture, which I would get it tested, if it turns out to be that way, you are better off maybe planting it 6 inches high and then sloping the soil gently away from it 3 or 4 feet in any direction around the tree. You can still make a watering basin, but that way you will increase the oxygen into the roots, and the roots will stay, you know, in the upper portions of the soil and kind of find their way to where they need to be. But the swimming pool under the tree isn't a good policy.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. That's really good to know, because everybody we've talked to out here, they're like, oh, make sure you put gravel down in the bed.
No.
Great.
No. Okay. That's kind of – it's. I see why people do it, but it's what I would probably call horticultural nonsense.
Okay. That's awesome. That's really good to know.
Tom doesn't mince words, James. You're going to get
I appreciate it.
Exactly what you think. So, all right, James, good luck with that. And it sounds like you've got some fun projects, and hopefully that goes well. I know your kids are going to love what you plant. So,
hey, thanks for your help, guys.
Enjoy that. And I'm telling you, James, enjoy these years. These are good ones. They're going to be good ones for you. All right, let's grab another call here. We've got – who have we got here? I got Ron in Mill Creek calling about your English walnut. Ron, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I took a start from my dad's tree, which is an English walnut, about a mile away. His tree's now 100 years old, still doing wonderful. Mine's about 30 years old and just been fine. And suddenly this year, there's no green on it.
Oh.
And I had a neighbor, kind of midpoint between my dad and me, that's lost three English walnuts. So I wonder if there's anything going on. By the way, I have another English walnut that I bought from Brown Floral 35 years ago, and it's doing wonderful, but the one next to it, 40, 50 feet away, is dead this year.
Hmm. What do you hear about this, Tom?
Well, I mentioned this a little earlier, and I've been talking to colleagues both in and out of USU Extension, and we've kind of decided that this year is kind of the year of the walnut apocalypse.
Uh-oh.
There have been, and it's not every one of them, but there's been walnuts statewide from, I know of, for at least from Nephi up north into Logan. We had a situation last year where we went from the 50s and got cold fast. And it got so cold so fast that we think that the walnuts did not go dormant in time, even though they had lost their leaves. There's much more that goes on so that they can get most of the water out of the tissue and a few things. And what we're seeing is consistently where you maybe have a quarter to a third of the canopy near the trunk alive, and then the top two-thirds of the canopy either severely damaged or dead. And this could be also contributed to by in 2019, we also had a really severe drop in late October, early October, from the 70s down to single digits. And sometimes that kind of damage doesn't show up for a couple of years. But it's Wasatch Front wide. And so far, all we've really been able to tell people to do is to not overwater the trees, make sure they get the water they need. What we're finding is that some of the trees are trying to relieve from dormant buds higher up in the canopy, so I would not start cutting limbs out yet.
Okay. Well, at least there's
now on this
tree, sorry, go ahead, this
way, there's maybe, actually, there's two little clusters in the bottom third of the tree. They're actually green and lovely, but 95-98% of the tree is... there's nothing on it. I imagine I should just call a guy and get it taken out, shouldn't I?
Well, and there is a disease out there called thousand cankers, and it has only been in the trees we've looked at in 10 to 15, maybe 20% of the trees, and it's fatal. And so you have to know what to look for, but you'll have cankers on the trunk and lower limbs that will be a darker gray or black color. And the cankers will coalesce and girdle the tree. And so there is a possibility that you have thousand cankers in this particular tree and it's just dead. That is out there, but about 80% of the trees we're looking at look to be that it's just been winter damage, but there's enough thousand cankers out there that I can't guarantee that it was just winter damage.
Right. Now, with most of the tree nothing on it, I could trim it all back to the little bit that's green and then maybe wait, but I doubt it's going to come back, is it?
Yeah, I mean, you can cut the bark into the bark with a knife in areas on the trunk and lower limbs and just do a really shallow cut so that you can get under the bark and look at the conductive tissue. Right under the bark, it should be green if it's going to come back. And if it's turned brown or black, go ahead and... that's very valuable wood for woodworking and things, but, you know, worse comes to worse. So we mentioned earlier repurposing trees, and it may just be time to turn it into furniture or lumber of some sort.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the advice I get on. I've called a number of times.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. And good luck with that English walnut. So disappointing, Tonda, you know, have decades into that tree. And it's a family legacy, too. You know, he took that tree, a cutting from his dad. And how disappointing is that? Go ahead.
What I would do if his dad is producing walnuts this year and it's healthy, collect the walnuts and plant them, put them somewhere in the garden and just look up planting walnuts and let them regrow. Plant five or six of them, and then once they germinate, you know, you can dig those up and move them to different areas so that at least, you know, you have genetics from dad's tree, but you have some genetic diversity, and you could spread those around a little bit if there's family members that want them so that you know that it's a direct descendant from dad's tree.
Yeah, that's a cool family.
Maybe one last quick comment.
Sure.
The tree I bought from Brown Floral, which is now Western Garden, has walnuts that maybe get up to 1.5 inch diameter. And this old tree that I got...
variety.
Yeah, they're different. The ones I got from my dad's house, maybe 3/4 inch. Walnuts.
Yeah, your dad's is probably seed grown. And that's the natural size of the walnuts. And the one you bought from Western Gardens is a cultivated variety that's grafted. And because it has such large nuts on it, they have to graft a branch onto a rootstock to keep it going. But that's going to be the difference in the two.
Ron, thanks again. Good luck to you. And we've got to grab a quick break here. When we come back, we've got Krista, Julie, and Keith hanging on the line. You're listening to the KSL Greenhouse.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back. You're in the KSL Greenhouse. I'm Ethan Millard, filling in for Maria Chaleos. We've got Tom Bettis here, as always, the USU Extension horticulturalist. You know, we got a text, Ton, asking if you would repeat that website for the soil test, which is so important because, you know, Ton, we put years into our gardens and especially the trees. You know, when you make a decision about a tree, you know, there's a strong chance that tree's going to outlive you. And so it's important to get it right, right? Just as important as it is to choose the right tree and get it in the right spot, you got to make sure that that soil is prepared to take it.
You really do. And so it's easier to plant a tree adapted to your soil than it is to adjust the soil to a tree you want. So that testing is really important, especially the salinity and the pH. So that address is just usual, the word usual, and then just usual.usu.edu. Or if you want to do a web search and just search for USU Analytical Laboratory, that will also bring up the website.
Now, we've got an ABC News break here coming up in just a couple of minutes. And you know, we can't miss that. We can't be late to it. So I'm going to hit you with a text question here, another one that came in. Can I trim my Fotinia bush in this heat? It's very overgrown. Could use a haircut. They're concerned, man. It's hot out there, Ton.
They can. It should have been done a couple of weeks ago, but it's fine. The Fotinias are pretty adaptable shrubs. Their biggest drawback is they're not super cold hardy. And so you want to prune it now if you need to, so that if you prune it in August, the new growth may not harden off and it would take some damage. So instead of just giving it a haircut, what I would do is use a technique called renewal pruning, to where you take 25% of the branches out from inside the bush, as close to the ground as you can get. You find the biggest branches, cut them out with a sawzall, a reciprocating saw, and you'll take the size of that bush down by at least a third. After that, you can then just give it a minor haircut. The advantage is you keep a lot more of the leaves, so it can produce a lot more energy and it keeps the bush healthier.
One other thing that I wanted to mention here. Well, actually, no, we'll save the weed torch, because I've got a follow up question for you. What are some of the plants that you want to stay away from touching, messing with in this heat? Are there any plants that you just want to kind of let it chill out?
Yeah, for the most part, when we start getting up to 90 to 100 degrees, pruning season is mostly over for major pruning. So any of your fruit trees, any of your bushes that have already blossomed, you want to leave major pruning for next year. You can still do some. And if you have to, they'll most likely recover. So the ones that are going to be quite sensitive, if you have maple trees, they don't like to be, especially the Norway maples, mm-hmm. don't like to be pruned in the middle of the summer, yeah. especially extensively. That can actually introduce internal rot diseases and things. The best time to prune those trees, when in doubt, prune in late January.
All right. And with that, we're going to jump to this break. When we come back, more of your calls. Doug, Krista, Julie, Keith, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.